91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's program profiles renowned South Florida-based architect Bernard Ziskovich. His education began in Miami Beach, but his projects range worldwide. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. His firm, Ziskovich Architects, built the largest South American passenger airport in Bogota. His signature South Florida project is the Midtown Miami complex. The Miami Beach Convention Center redevelopment was his project as well. But on to the new. Ziskovich Architects propose a makeover of the spectacular Rickenbacker Causeway, the route to Key Biscayne. There's some controversy about the project, but its main aim would create a recreation area on the Miami Bayside, as well as multiple bike paths for the road. So stay tuned. Topical Currents up next, after the news.
Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and today's Topical Currents, Monday edition.
Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you for filling in, not filling in, but allowing me to go by.
Well, we missed
by
you.
Doing your solo jobs.
Okay.
I understand they were to critical acclaim also.
Sure.
Well, this hour we profile noted architect Bernard Ziskovich, who's headed his eponymous Miami-based architecture firm for some 40 years.
Ziskovich is known for his real urbanism concept, a modification of the new urbanism principles of mixed-use streetscapes with less car-oriented street plans.
His best-known South Florida project is Miami Midtown, just north of downtown Miami, highlighted by the shops in Midtown. Also, there was the Miami Beach Convention Center Redevelopment District.
Ziskovich Architects have many international projects as well, plus plans for the Plan Z venture to transform the Eastern Rickenbacker Causeway into parkland and ambitious bikeways. We'll address Plan Z during this hour. Welcome, Bernard Ziskovich.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you. Congratulations on 40 years.
I know. It's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe, especially particularly noteworthy for South Florida. We're not exactly known for longevity, for things having longevity here. But I want to ask what changes you've seen in architecture and how you've had to adapt to those changes to stay relevant over 40 years.
Well, I think that that's a great question. It's Miami, I believe at this point is, and I hope listeners don't take this the wrong way, but I think it's becoming a lot more interesting lately. You know, Miami back then, 40 years ago, was still very much a city that was provincial, that had a lot of activities going on in terms of international issues, but mostly directed toward Cuba. And at this point in time, I think we've really kind of hit a new mark. We have a larger population. We have new cultural institutions, new infrastructure. We have the development of neighborhoods, which I think is the key to making great cities. And now there's so many new neighborhoods that have evolved in the past 10 years that I think we now have something very solid of our own, and we're not relying only on celebrity.
You say in some material I was looking at that you believe your project should give social betterment. That's not real common in South Florida.
Well, you know, first of all, we all try to hang on to what we can in terms of what drives us to do the work that we do. For us, in the very beginning, I had the opportunity to go into the type of practice where I did only luxury or only homes or things that might be related to design in its pure form. But what I decided to do early on was to try to direct the practice toward things that give back in some way. We devoted ourselves to education, to urban planning, to things that are, in my view, skill sets where talent can be put in the direction of social betterment.
Is there anything you would have done differently over these 40 years? I know you can still do it because you still are doing it, but right. Is there anything you would have changed?
Well, I think, you know, for an architect, it's really a funny set of circumstances because you have both left brain, right brain activities. And by that, I mean there's a part of the process that's about building the practice and making money and doing those things. And then there's also the idea of design and creativity and art. So what we've tried to do is merge the two into what has obviously been a successful run. I think in retrospect, I might have pushed a little harder on some of the business development analytics that I think could make a firm stronger. By that, I mean maybe more money put into marketing, more money put into promotion and publications, getting our name out there more. I was really pretty much satisfied with the idea of local growth and doing things here. But over the years, we've been pushing out into other locations. We now have an office in New York. We have an office in Orlando. We have an office in Bogota, Colombia. And the funny thing is that it's almost like we're both a company that has longevity, but a company that thinks like a startup.
Another oddity about you, Bernard, you're an architect, but you were never attracted to drawing in your early years. That seems odd. Most budding architects are drawing and sketching all the time.
That's really true. And the older I get, the more I realize how rare it is. I'm one of those people that grew up here. I think, first of all, that's fairly rare to begin with. I grew up on Miami Beach. My father died when I was young. I was raised by my mom. And her idea of my future success was to send me to the Hebrew Academy. So I had a rigorous education that did not, unfortunately, include art or cultural
Also
uses.
A year at Miami-Dade.
And I went to Miami-Dade for a year. And during that time, I was doing a lot of reading and ran across the Fountainhead and realized that that seemed like something I would like because it had a lot of
powerful, individual, dynamic,
resources, rely on yourself. So what attracted me initially to architecture was actually not design. It was this idea of the individual being able to make a change. What surprised me, I guess, and others, was that eventually I found my way into Pratt in New York and was very embraced by the dean and the assistant dean. And they said, look, we really like the way you think. We really like your attitude. And don't worry about the artistic side. We'll teach you to draw while you're here. And now I can draw. So I don't want to give anyone the wrong impression. I can do what other architects do personally. It's just that was not how I started.
You said to Susan Dansayer of Miami Today in that interview, you said during the year you spent at Miami-Dade and another University of Florida, you had lots of stories of falling on your face during those years.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a couple of the most.
Oh, you want me to tell you stories of falling on my face?
Well, just because of.
One or two.
Just one or two. And, you know, we can juxtapose it against where you are today.
Well, my first. Well, just to begin, I graduated in a school of nine here in Miami of high school. And out of the nine, five are doctors. One's a NASA scientist. One's a chief rabbi of Israel. And then there's an architect and one businessman. So my first class I'll never forget in Gainesville was a class taught by a television, which I had never seen before because there were so many students in the school that I felt completely lost. So when I got to the architecture department, I'll give you a story of falling on my face. We had to do a sketch, which I was terrible at, but what was worse is I had to frame it. And I had no idea what a straight edge was, and I didn't know how to use an X-Acto knife. And I ended up cutting my fingers and bleeding over the frame that I turned in. And the professor told me, I have never seen anything like this. And, what are you doing here? And I guess it was just this sense of resiliency and stick-to-itiveness that I decided maybe the problem was my skills and not my process. So I had a lot of experiences of not being able to keep up with basically what Joe was saying. All these other kids.
Who could draw.
They could draw. They knew the tools. They understood all this stuff. I didn't have any of that in my background, and I just had a different mindset.
Going back over 40 years, you started at in the vintage or the era when people were looking forward and anticipated new developments, and now people mostly look at new developments with a lot of skepticism. Could you comment on that? The way the attitudes have changed.
Well, I think that I think society has changed, and I think that we as architects and artists reflect society. I don't think it really goes the other way. So I think that development has always been something that should have a positive result, because as a society, one thing you can be sure of is that during these eons of evolution, we have been developing. It's just that Miami, during its growth, became a location for investment that had nothing to do with residents. So you end up with empty apartments,
the international,
nobody living there, the international scene. And that has an impact. It has an impact urbanistically from the standpoint of having the buildings but not the population to support the city. It has this darker side where if there were really people living there, there would be a lot more pressure for transportation and infrastructure improvements. Nobody lives there. You don't really need it.
Right.
So we built a city in a way, in a hollow way. And I think that at this point in time, it developed an attitude among a lot of the people that development is really looked at as just a degradation of lifestyle. But I think that we need to look beyond that to really be able to understand that as the city grows and the population grows, we're going to have a lot more pressure for better infrastructure and better results, and we're going to have a more complete city. And that's the part that I'm looking forward to.
Do you address... Let's take our break. I want to ask about transportation because you mentioned it, and obviously it's the bane of just about everyone's existence here in South Florida now. We're speaking with Bernard Zyskowicz. He's the founder and managing principal of Zyskowicz Architects. He's an award-winning architect and internationally recognized. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
And we're back 19 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. We continue with architect Bernard Zyskowicz, who's headed his Bernard Zyskowicz architect firm for more than 40 years in the South Florida area, based in the South Florida area.
So we were talking about, I wanted to go back to the transportation because it has changed. And now that we have this gentrification in many places and this development, traffic is a problem. So how do you address that in your designs?
Well, we do it in a number of ways. First of all, a large part of our urban design and planning practice has taken on a transportation focus. So we're intentionally trying to get more involved in through the good fortune of being selected to be involved, obviously. We collaborated with SOM in the development of All Aboard Florida, now called Brightline. We've done work for Tri-Rail. We've done work for the Metro Mover. I'm totally driven by the idea personally of trying to make Miami more of a bicycle-friendly city, because I think we have great opportunities here through the amount of days of good weather and our flat terrain. It's a perfect idea. So I think that we also have the unknown ahead of us, which I think is super exciting, which is, and I have to say lately when I've been sitting in traffic, I've been thinking to myself, I am so ready for an autonomous car, because I think that it's right ahead of us. I was just recently out on the West Coast in California. They're already talking about it. And Singapore, I don't know if you know this, they're doing an experiment with taxis in Singapore that are traveling the city as driverless autonomous cars. This is in our near future. And I think that it's going to change so much, because when you look at it from the standpoint of a traffic engineer, forget all the issues of streetscape and damage done by our highway system to friendliness, to walk, etc. But put that aside for a second. When you look at it and think about it yourself, so much of the time spent is in the merging of lanes, is in the traffic congestion caused by ourselves, by people doing unpredictable things. If you're being controlled by all of these vehicles communicating with each other as one giant system, I think eventually that becomes a much better answer. And it's interesting because there are transportation entities today that are looking at cars becoming trains. So let me give you an example. If you want to drive from here to Orlando, Right now, there's a thought process going on at the Turnpike where these cars all know that when you get on the road that your destination is Orlando, they will form a line and be able to drive that line for hundreds of miles without actually having to worry about anyone entering the line because the other cars that are doing more localized things will act differently. So there's going to be a much more, you know, I think of it as the difference between analog and digital. Look at the level of communication we can multitask now without having to try to manage it in the old days like we used to. I think the same is going to happen with transportation.
Hope you're right.
With the weather here and the terrain, of course, what you say is completely true about the bicycle.
Right.
But 98% of people in South Florida still use their cars to go to work or to school, and they don't seem to be eager to give them up, despite all of the bike lanes.
Oh, I agree. Well, first of all, there's a kind of a hidden problem there, which is the bike lanes that we have are called shared lanes, and shared lanes are not bike lanes. And it's been proven when you look at Copenhagen and Amsterdam and the cities that have really given itself to that as a solution. The bike lane has to be separated.
Absolutely.
And there's no way for it to work any other way. And once the lanes are separated and there's space dedicated, I would bet big money that the embrace locally would be dramatic. It's just that I meet so many people that say, you know, I used to ride on the road. Now I have a stationary bike in my bedroom.
Yeah, because they're scared to get hit here because it's...
What we have to do is make it safe. The same thing happened with making it safe for cars. And I just think it's a transformational moment, and we should get into it.
Which brings us to the Rickenbacker Causeway.
Okay. Well, this was the culmination of two different thoughts that have been in my brain. One of them is more personal, which is that 40 years, people would expect that there would be some form of retirement plan. I've been thinking about it a lot on my own. You get to be a certain point in life, you say, that's what everybody else is doing. So I've been thinking about what do I want to do as I continue to grow in my own life, and how do I want to deal with that? The second issue was because I'm one of those guys on the road, on the Rickenbacker, that could easily have been me. And I'm thinking, this is
what
I do.
You mean that was
the deaths on the highway. What can I do about it? This is my line of work. Maybe I can create a plan. So what I decided to do was form a foundation, which I did. And I now have a nonprofit called Plan Z for Miami. And what I've been thinking is, at one level, on the personal level, is this is what I believe we in the firm and I personally can do as I continue to practice, because, frankly, I don't see giving this up. I'm having too much fun, and I love doing this, and why should I stop? So I'm going to continue to do my work, and I think that part of what we do in the future will be formally to find projects that we can devote ourselves to, that we can fund, that we can promote, and that we can push as a way of giving something back to the community that's been so good to me. And the first project is this Rickenbacker idea, because it's the most popular ride in Florida. We've been talking to lots of different people. It's the most vulnerable causeway to sea level rise. There's almost 2,000 acres of parkland out there. We could take the road, move it over, and make, you know, thousands of feet of additional new beach that's accessible to the public. And while we're doing that, we separate out the bikes and we make it safe for everybody.
I just want to go back before we get too far ahead to the foundation. With the foundation, the Plan Z for Miami, does that mean that you're working on a pro bono basis?
Yes.
Okay. And that's one question. And the other question was... Oh, the sea level rise. When you say, how does that enter into this?
Well, design is a funny thing. It's incremental. So you have an idea, and then you build it, and you build it, and you build it, and you keep adding in more ideas. One of the things that happened is last October, the county came out with a report that said, in terms of the most vulnerable roadways to flooding, Rickenbacker was at the top of the list. Mm. And I've been already thinking I'd like to move the road north toward the Marine Stadium fence and the other side in order to liberate 20 acres of new land for new park that could be a beach for the community. And the sea level rise plays into that perfectly, because once we're moving the road, we might as well raise it and solve the sea level rise at the same time. So what we're trying to do is understand the vulnerability of Bear Cut Bridge, the vulnerability of being on the bike in the most popular ride in the entire state of Florida, which is statistically correct, and the other assets of parkland and sea level rise. You put the whole thing together, and now you have a really strong reason to make this change.
The property in question where the park would be is currently City of Miami property.
No, it's county.
But I thought it was transferring from the city to the county.
No. It's all county land. Everything I'm proposing is 100% on county land.
And how much would this cost?
We're still trying to price it out.
And how would it be paid for?
We're going to have to find creative funding means. But without telling you too much, I'm working on it.
Okay. But and then I heard that it would mean an increase. Would it necessitate increasing the toll?
Well, if the decision was to process it through that means of paying for it, there would be an increase in the tolls if it was going to be paid for through access, dollars for access. Right now, that seems to be the most viable thing. But the reason that we're talking about it is to try to find our way into the best answer. So we're working on it.
Would the property retain its being public property?
Oh, yeah, 100% public property.
Let's open the phones. Our number is 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Our email is radio@wlrn.org. We're speaking with renowned architect Bernard Zyskowicz, 1-800-743-9576. So, and who determines if you can make these changes, if this is going to go through?
We have indications from the county that they support this idea. And the question becomes, how can we justify doing this in the context of other big issues that face our community?
Okay.
So the good news is the county has been very supportive of the concept, and they would like to find a way for us to move it forward. What I'm doing as part of my personal efforts is trying to find funding sources and entities that would be interested in being able to help us understand how we could get to a funding source that would be able to implement the project.
Could there be bond issues involved?
There could be bond issues involved. There could be tolling issues involved. There could be grants involved. One of the things that's so important, and what I think is really important to stress, is that everybody has a different vision, I believe, of what this project is. For some people, it's a bicycle plan. I'm just trying to stress that for other people and other purposes, it's a sea level protection plan. It's a park enhancement plan. It's a beach enhancement plan.
So you think it benefits more than just bikers?
That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay. I think it's a very big public statement about the future of our community in the context that Miami is actually one of the most unsafe places in the country to ride. And I think that this could be a very strong statement to change the direction of our city.
Speaking of sea level rise, of course, we've been called ground zero for climate change and sea level rise. What else are you doing? How do you take that into consideration? In what ways do you take that, aside from Plan Z?
Does it affect your projects?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And what we're doing is we're working on projects, by example, one on Miami Beach, actually two on Miami Beach right now. We're working with the city. We've asked for variances because we want to raise the level of the floor of the building in order to get it out of the water in the future.
Right.
It's coinciding with an attempt that has been successful for the city to agree to also use that location as a place to raise the street. So we're going to be cooperating with the city, raising the street and building the new building at the same time so that both can be protected against sea level rise. And I think that requires variances. It requires a willing client. But so far, our clients have been interested in trying to future-proof their buildings.
Will South Beach be the new Stiltsville?
Well, if we should be that lucky, I love Stiltsville.
Yeah.
I think South Beach is doing what they can. I mean, they are definitely ahead of the curve on trying to make change.
You mean with the pumps?
With the pumps and the roads.
Ah, time for another break. Speaking with architect Bernard Zyskowicz, and we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, your emails, 1-800-743-9576.
And we return with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Bernard Zyskowicz. And we're talking about architecture, we're talking about Plan Z, we're doing a profile on Mr. Zyskowicz. If you'd like to join in, it's easy enough, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN, or email, that might be the best way, radio@WLRN.org. Bernard, with the aging realities of South Florida, your Park Square, Aventura, talk about the needs for multi-generational living in the area as the population continues to age and how it affects your plans.
Well, sometimes difficulties are an opportunity. In the case of Aventura, which is a city that really did not want additional housing, the question became what kind of uses would actually be valuable. And what we discovered was a large population that the city told us about of people who would like to age in place in the city. So as a result of that, we came up with this idea of Park Square, which is now nearing the end of construction, which is a whole new neighborhood in Aventura, to begin to play with this idea of multiple generations living in the same place. Because back to this idea of the baby boomers and people moving through the stages of life, I don't think any of us really want to be isolated. And there may be a point in time where we need some additional help. So the idea is let's start to look at all ages living in one place together, and let's design the location for that. So in Aventura Park Square, we're going to end up with what I believe is a really trendy, very cool retail core. We're getting Icebox and Barry's Boot Camp and all the really good new brands that everybody wants. But in the corner of the site, there's going to be an adult living facility that will have ground level access where people there can walk out. We've designed the sidewalks and the streets so that we have what's called curbless. I'm sure you've seen it in other parts of cities where you're not stepping down from the curb. The street and the sidewalk are essentially at the same level. So we're building in interesting things to do for all age groups. There's going to be a Class A office building, two hotels, a condo.
And where is this going to be?
This is on Waterways Boulevard in Aventura.
Okay.
And it's a 7-acre site, and we're doing all six buildings, and they're all coming up at one time. It's going to be like an instant neighborhood. It's the first time we've done that we're...
We've
done
all
the planning and all the architecture, and it's being constructed all at once.
I want to ask about Mana. Yeah, that does sound... And it's called Aventura Park.
Aventura Park Square.
Park Square. I want to ask about Mana Wynwood. I'm interested in that. So what is that? Where is that going to be?
Well, Mana Wynwood is on the southern end of Wynwood, and it's between 22nd Street and 24th Street. It goes from 2nd Avenue all the way west to I-95. So
Northwest 2nd.
Yeah. So Moshe Mana is... if you're from New York, you know who he is. He's Moshe's Movers. And he's a person with a tremendously interesting character and vision. And what we've been cooking up is this idea that, back to this original thought of Miami becoming a place that has real interest now, the idea is that rather than go for residential or hospitality, what we're trying to do is take advantage of globalization during these times, maybe nationally, that nobody thinks that we're moving forward. So we're thinking we're becoming what was mainstream suddenly seems counter-mainstream. We want to create this place where Latin America, the Americas in general, and Asia can come together with a concept for international trade, showrooms, and international finance center where banks and industry can come together, because we believe that there's a gap in the ability for Asia and Latin America to come together for future business activities. And we think Miami is the ideal location for that hub. So we're looking at making a network of networks. So every country in South America, as we all know who live here, the rest of the country thinks all Latins are the same. We know that's not true. So you have all of the individual countries of Central South America. You have all the countries of Asia. And they don't really have a place anywhere in the U.S. where all of these interests converge. And we want to be that place.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't realize that's...
That's the concept behind it. So we're looking at, we created a new zoning code and a new plan with the help of the city called a special area plan. We have all of our buildings will be able to be very high ceilings. They will be, if you're familiar with New York, it's going to look a lot like Soho. It's just going to be very large floor plates, very flexible uses. We have a very large open space we're calling Mana Common, which is a courtyard where we're going to be able to have exhibitions and trade shows. And we're looking at bringing the world together in Wynwood.
Now, what about the displacement of people that are there? Will that...
Well, in this one time in my whole life, I can honestly tell you nobody's there.
Okay.
It's all vacant land. There's an exhibition hall and some warehouses that are unoccupied. So it's that space that used to be the free trade zone, if you remember, that was in litigation for years and years here in Miami. So that's the location, and it's the initial phase is 24 acres. It's going to grow by another 15 because he's acquiring more land. And we're looking at being that connective point between Wynwood and Overtown.
Let's take a call or two from listeners. First up, we have Howie in Miami. Howie, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if
I don't hear
how many feet would the Rickenbacker Causeway be raised to combat sea level rise, and would it disturb any of the underwater sea life in the process of building?
Great question. The answer is it'll be raised by about 2.5 to 3 feet, and all of the proposed new development would happen within the land that is already there on the causeway, and it would not even get close to the water.
It would be the entire length of the causeway.
It would be the right. entire length of the causeway.
Good question, Howie.
Okay, thanks. Next up, we have Lauren in Miami. Lauren, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My question is in regards to Plan Z, with estimates of approximately $400 million for this development and the cycle component being approximately $150, how much are the cyclists going to contribute to this?
Well, cyclists are cyclists only when they're on the bike. Cyclists will contribute like everyone else.
This is also recreation. So in regards to the tolls being raised, are cyclists going to have to pay a toll, or is it only the vehicles entering that are going to be hit with this?
Well, first of all, we don't know what the ultimate disposition of the project would be. So if we're lucky enough to actually be able to implement this, everyone who travels the causeway in a vehicle will pay a toll. As far as whether the bicyclists pay a toll or not, that's something that's very hard to monitor and legislate. And I know it's a hot button issue for a lot of different people, those who are for and against cyclists. So I don't really know how to answer that question right now.
Okay, thanks, Lauren.
And
go ahead.
Oh, can I ask one more question, please?
Sure.
Do you think that it's fair for the vehicles to have the raised toll? Because a majority of those entering are individuals who are working people just trying to enjoy time with their family at the beach. So won't this decrease the amount that they're able to travel there and enjoy this time?
Well, if the tolling is the way that it goes, our initial estimates are quite low in terms of how much the tolls would go.
Like $8 to $10?
Oh, it's way less than that. way less than
that.
I saw figures of $8 to $10.
No, that's what you go if you're going to Sanibel or one of the other institutions. Right now, we're looking at the toll for just the average person driving is $1.75. I don't think it would be, you know, right now the initial
the
dollar. It's $1.75 to get onto the causeway.
So it wouldn't raise.
No, no, it would raise, but I don't think it would raise by much more than the amount of the initial toll. So it'd be basically doubled. But it's a very, very minor toll increase for a very long extended stay. But see, this is the problem where good intentions, people suffer with the prospect of good intentions. I've gone to great lengths to explain that this replaces the Bearcut Bridge. This is huge. The Bearcut Bridge is vulnerable to any hurricane. A hurricane comes through and washes through there. The Bearcut Bridge is wiped out and Key Biscayne is separated from the mainland. New Bearcut Bridge. Sea level rise. The causeway is increased. 20 acres of new park for everybody. All kinds of other infrastructure improvements along the way. And separated bike lanes. So when you look at the project, it's just really important, and I don't know how much to emphasize this, that this is an infrastructure improvement for everybody that goes out to the causeway.
How's this being
for
received in
purpose.
Key Biscayne?
Key Biscayne is coming around. You know, they have concerns, like the caller is suggesting, what's the impact on their residents. There's already discounts for working people, which would remain in any new scheme. But we're trying to find the best way to approach being able to implement the plan, because the value is in the implementation of the plan.
Of course, historically, toll charges have been lied about a lot. I mean, originally, the Florida Turnpike was going to drop the tolls when it was paid for.
Right.
But with this toll here, the largest county park, I think, is Crandon Park. But I've seen a lot of figures that show the toll cost could be $8 to $10 to do that. For a family to go to Crandon Park for an afternoon at the beach could be up really a lot higher than just double what it is now.
Well, I think when you – well, let's look at it from a different point of view. Right now you have to pay to park at Crandon Park.
Right.
So when you look at the cost, you include the parking. I'm just saying that there's a lot of moving parts here. And in every other situation, this would be a completely pie-in-the-sky idea. The fact that we are being able to look at identifying some funding sources is an opportunity to make these changes. Because if you look at these changes ever happening without finding a funding source, they're never going to happen. The causeway will be underwater. People will continue to be hit on the bike. The causeway bridge will not get replaced. And all of these things will same, and we'll be able to say that we didn't change any of the costs. I look at it from the glass half full. I'm saying we in Miami, and this is where I get on my soapbox, we need to be one of the great cities in the world. We have something phenomenal. We have a causeway that is an asset beyond belief, and people love it. We have 2,000 acres of parkland out there when you put together Cape Florida, Virginia Key, Marine Stadium, all of the waterfront marinas, everything else. So very often I'm put in a position where I have to defend this plan.
Right.
And my defense is a really simple plan. This is an asset for every single citizen in Dade County. The costs of making it happen are relatively small compared to what it would be if we had to reach into our pockets and begin to find sources of funding locally, which we would never find. Ooh. So if we can find other sources of funding and the users of the causeway have to pay a little bit more, and we get this great improvement, to me, that's a huge benefit. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish.
I don't know if you just asked this, Joe, the residents of Key Biscayne overall.
The residents of Key Biscayne, by and large, have embraced the plan. They have some concerns about the impacts of the financial issues. They are very happy about being able to drive and not be in the same space as a bicycle, because truthfully, I've heard a lot of those residents say to me, they're very worried about hitting somebody. They don't want to hit somebody. So if we can begin with the most popular ride in the entire state to begin to change the mindset in Miami, I think that's a really positive thing.
We're speaking with the founder and managing principal of Ziskovich Architects, Bernard Ziskovich, award-winning architect and internationally recognized. Our last break. We'll be back, and we will take more of your calls. Stay with us.
And it is today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and architect Bernard Ziskovich. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Key Biscayne caller, Myra.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I think this is the mayor.
Yes.
This is?
Oh, okay. Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Welcome.
Thank you very much. I've got a couple of it. What a great show. Thank you all for doing this. I do have some questions because I'm a little concerned. I believe that because Rickenbacker Causeway is in fact a toll road, there is a funding mechanism and a way to and an obligation to maintain the roads and the bridges. So, Bernard, I'm a little concerned that you're saying that without this, that the Bear Cut Bridge would not be improved, which, by the way, there has been a finding that it needs to be replaced, and I think with or without Plan Z. So that is a concern for me and for all the listeners. I want to make sure, you know, that one, you clarify this, because I believe that Miami-Dade County is pretty responsible owner of the bridges and that they would replace it if it's needed. So I think with or without Plan Z, I want to make that clear. Or if you have more information, then please let me know, because we need to look into this.
Actually, I agree with you 100%. What I'm saying is if we could implement Plan Z, which has included in it the replacement of the bridge, it would happen right away.
I think it has to happen pretty quickly because it's got about 7 years left in its useful life. So hopefully that's known to everyone.
And Myra, I thank you for the call, because I think that's really an important clarification, because the only point I was trying to make is that part of the cost of doing this is, in fact, the replacement of the bridge, which is critically important.
Let me ask each of you, because I don't know how this works. How do you get a bond issued in order to pay for something?
Well, bonding is one form of paying for something. There are other forms of paying for things.
It's voter approved.
Oh, okay.
Well, it can be, or in this situation, because it's a toll bridge, it's a toll road,
right,
and it's got a self-funding mechanism. You can issue the bond based on projected, trips and what the income the toll is going to generate.
I see.
So if, you would, for a bond for $100 million would be a far different obligation on toll users and toll payers than a bond for $500 million, and you have to kind of, tweak the tolls and tweak the projections based on cost.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thanks for your call, Mayor.
Thank you all very much. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
And next up we have Stephanie in Key Biscayne. Stephanie, you're up.
Yes, hi. I was, in Key Biscayne we get impacted by everything that goes on between here and Miami, such as the boat show, the tennis tournament, and those that increase in traffic hasn't really benefited Key Biscayne businesses too much, because all of the businesses are self-contained within the tournament or within the boat show. So we get all the pain and none of the gain. So I was wondering how this project is going to improve the situation for Key Biscayners who have to travel that every single day. Besides obviously improving the safety of bikers, which we all want.
Well, I think the answer is to be able to have a new bridge is a gain. To be able to have a causeway reconstructed so that it won't be underwater in the future is a gain. I think separating the bikes from the drivers is a gain for the drivers. A lot of people that I've met have told me that they feel very insecure knowing that the cyclists are so close to them, and they would prefer to have a separated road. I think the additional parkland would be a gain. I think the integration of all the park systems together to provide what Key Biscayne also needs. I know that the Key is working on ways in which they can enhance their own park system for their own residents. I think that this is an opportunity to look at all of the islands and all of the roadway comprehensively and mm-hmm. come up with an answer that is actually a gain for everyone, including the residents of the Key.
Okay, Stephanie, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
And we move along to Luis in Miami. Luis, hi.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick question. What is going to happen to the people who have their boats in the Marine Stadium Marina, where customers who have been there for many years?
That's a separate issue. That's City of Miami Marina project. That has nothing to do with Plan Z.
Thank you.
So as far as you know, it's the status quo.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll move along to Valerie in Aventura. Valerie, hi.
Hi. We are indeed very lucky to have Mr. Ziskovich as, in our community. Know many of your projects, and it's all wonderful. But as I was driving south on I-95 from Aventura to Coral Gables, I couldn't help looking to the right and observing how many of our blighted communities, long blighted communities, are screaming for the kind of innovation and creativity and resources that are necessary to build communities of dignity for members of our community who have been overlooked for so long and so repeatedly. So I don't want to put you in a corner, because it's not fair. It's not just about you. But what are we doing for folks that really need talent such as yours?
Affordable housing.
Well, affordable housing, exactly.
Well, let me try to answer the question. Something that needs to be said that hasn't been said. I have fabulous partners, and I have an incredible staff of 100 architects devoted to these issues in our offices. My partners are great architects unto themselves, and they produce great innovation. In education, we're creating some of the most innovative schools anywhere. In our master planning, we're doing things that are really important for communities through trying to use the most innovative techniques to bring in digital awareness and other things. So what I'm saying is, when we do get to do a project, we go from this public purpose point of view. That was the beginning of the discussion today. And that really is what drives our efforts. And I like to believe that's maybe one of the reasons we've been successful all these years and our firm is growing even today. I think the most important thing that we can do is take advantage of every new project, and I don't mean us alone, I mean all of us, and try to support the idea of change and innovation, because I think Miami suffers from something that is unfortunate, which is common in many places, which is, as Joe mentioned, there's just so much skepticism to any change that our first reaction is to make sure it doesn't happen. And our city isn't going to grow, and these communities that deserve so much help are not going to be able to improve unless we have a different attitude about change.
I just want, when you brought up...
thanks for your call.
Thank you, Mana Winwood.
Uh-huh.
And you said it was going to go to Overtown. I had a question about that. Are you going to work in Overtown, too, to improve?
We've had actually great meetings with the district commissioner of Overtown, Keon Hardiman, about how we can begin to integrate into Overtown. One of the things about what we're doing in Mana is it's all about jobs. And the jobs are not going to be jobs that are minimum wage. They're going to be jobs that are technological, jobs that are international, and we're going to be looking to grow our own staff together with the international visitors that come.
Well, we want to thank Bernard Ziskovich. He's the founder and managing principal of Ziskovich Architects. He's an award-winning architect, internationally recognized. And do you still serve on the City of Miami Urban Development Review Board?
I did my time. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, it's planzmiami.com if you want to know more about that plan.
Great.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Our lead producer, Richard Ives. Technical supervision from online content producer, Jason Zabka. Polly Landis is associate producer. And remember, it's easy to download free audio archives of this and past programs at our website. That's WLRN.org. Follow the radio link. More information as well on the Topical Currents Facebook page. Then there's the Topical Currents iTunes podcast. Our next edition tomorrow looks at those with autism spectrum disorder and how they're helped to gain education and jobs. We'll have a panel of experts with updates and advice. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.